So we'd like to welcome everybody to this, well, at least here in Malmo, it doesn't look anymore midwinter. What about in India? But we still call this midwinter leadership seminar. So last summer, we had the strategic planning. Now it's supposed to be done. Narakirti Prabhu was proposing that in the light of the bhakti. And then there is also very interesting topic about the dharma based on Maharaj Yudhishthira's instruction, Mahabharata chapter 24. Most of all, we have the great fortune that Solness Bhakti Vidyapuna Maharaj could now squeeze from his schedule these few afternoons for this topic. When you have a question, raise your hand, and or some cases you spontaneously just put microphone on if you know, by your own risk feel that it's something you like to comment immediately. Most of all, welcome His Holiness Bhakti Vidyapuna Maharaj Ki.
Jai.
Last time on Saturday we had some connection problems, but let's see now. Start to put your videos a little off in the case that, but now seems to be so.
So far this morning, Prabhu, the signal is very good. Even Maharaj's signal is full bars. So we should be good.
Great. Please, Maharaj, the floor is full yours.
Okay. So we're going with the Yudhishthira's moral instructions from chapter 24.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this is from Krishna Dharma's Mahabharata. Mm. You know, his telling of it. Okay. So on page 237, then we have. So here is that the Pandavas of Bennett dwelt Dvaitavan, and that, and then. Yudhishthira was comfortable living there, and he was, you know, taking the time, because he had been asked to live in the forest for 12 years, and so then he's, you know, maintaining that position, that due to dharma, that Dhritarashtra, you know, who raised him like the father, because his father was gone from when they were young. And so then, because he, as authority, had been very comfortable with Duryodhana's gambling match and his stake that they all go to the forest, whoever loses, meaning Yudhishthira. And so he's taken that vow. So that's an important element to see, is why did Yudhishthira do this? Because he's performing his duties. Because in the Vedic system, performance of your duties is the most important element. I mean, it's, of course, God consciousness. But within God consciousness, you're going to express that through performance of your duties. Because otherwise, if you don't have duties, then how do you express? What's the method? What's the way you do? Just like, let's say we're using language, we have to use the words, we have to use how they're pronounced, we have to use them in the context of grammar, you know, and all those. And when you get that very nicely done, the communication is very good. So in the same way, that devotion to the Lord, then there must be a medium to express it. So in the spiritual world, people naturally have their relationship with the Lord based on the particular attraction they have to the Lord, the particular rati. And so in that swabhava, then they have they're the ashray of a particular attraction for Krishna, and Krishna is the object of that. So then Krishna being, let's say, the object of the cowherd boy's interest, or in this case, Yudhishthira's and the Pandavas' interest, then they become the, you know, the ones who are the shelter of that mood of service towards Krishna in that way. And so then they then reciprocate with Krishna based on that mood. They don't do moods in something else. They don't do friend, you know, let's say necessarily they have that aspect of servitorship for the younger ones. Arjuna then is like an equal. And then Bhima and Yudhishthira then have a mix of the senior. But it's only going to have that. They're not going to act outside of that. And they're residents of the Dwarka scene. So they're going to act within that. They're not going to act like Braj bosses. So in this way, then the rasa goes very nicely. So then those aspects of rasa, then those, when they reflect the direct aspects of the rasa that give the direct experience, those reflect into the material world as piety. And so therefore, that's why you see the devotees, they follow, you know, the directions of the scripture as given by the acharyas, what particular acts of religion are performed and used to express their devotion. So the devotion's the main, but you have to have something to express it. So it doesn't really work very well when someone just spontaneously does whatever they like, whenever they like, however they like, whenever they like, and all this. And, you know, maybe for them, sometimes it works, sometimes not. But the problem is then what's the relation, what's the consistency of that expression? That will be a problem. So therefore, to avoid that, then one follows your duties. Now, of course, in the material world, people don't like their duties unless they see that they're going to get some specific material benefit from that. I perform the duties. I go to the heavenly planets. I perform the duties. I get some position or respect or, you know, something. Then they will consider, oh, these duties are good, right? You know, it's just like an individual say, oh, no, we just chant. We don't care for all these rules and that. It says, yeah, but you go to work every day at 9, come back at 5. Why don't you go at 6 in the morning and come back at 3 at the afternoon, or go at 3 in the afternoon and stay till midnight? And that, no, because they get fired. So all this, you know, we chant, we don't care for the rules, only applies to Krishna. It doesn't apply to anything else in the material world. So that's the difficulty, is that the living entity, without understanding where this concept of staying within the context of your particular position comes from, they don't know it comes from Krishna and there's relationship with the, you know, with the devotees in the spiritual world. And so that we know all that expands from Braj. So Mother Jashoda just does Mother Jashoda stuff. Nanda Baba does Nanda Baba stuff. Subal does Subal stuff. Sridham does Sridham stuff. The gopis do their stuff. The cows do their stuff. You don't hear of the cows coming out in tutus and dancing at the Rasa Lila, you know, and then bring a few of the crocodiles from the, Jamuna and all that. Of course, I mean, you know, as far as Disney was concerned, it was, you know, good, clean fun. But otherwise, then it doesn't happen. So that's the important thing. It's not about the rules, but there is a situation in which you perform your duties. Therefore, the cowherd boys perform all their, you know, riotous playing around and jumping up and down when they're in the forest, not in Mother Jashoda's house. They won't be rambunctious in Mother Jashoda's house. They're going to behave themselves because the aspect servitorship towards, you know, the adults. And so they're going to act as children. And Mother Jashoda is going to have that parental mood, and she's going to treat them like children. And so in this way, their rasa goes and then unfolds. So therefore, as children, Krishna's a child. He's taking, you know, his meal. His friends also sit down and take the meal with him. And, you know, they follow their particular decorum. And so then it works really well. And so the rasa is very, it's the spontaneity isn't in changing the situations, changing what you do and that. It's the spontaneity is the natural attraction and affection and desire to express that to Krishna. That's what spontaneity. Can't hear us?
It's fine, Marge. Please continue.
Maybe we should learn sign, you know, like the sign language and all that. Then I could just talk and do all this stuff. And then we wouldn't have to worry about the sound, right?
Unless somebody new just joined and their microphone was unmuted. So that's why it disturbed.
Ah, okay. I thought someone was telling me they can't hear me.
No.
Okay. So that's that. If one understands this, then so many of these nice stories in Mahabharata and Krishna will start to make sense. Because you never see that the gopis are going out at some odd time of the day to meet Krishna. They go out at noontime, they go out at night. Cowherd boys go out in the morning and come back in the afternoon. They don't go out at night to play with Krishna. They don't do hide and seek at night in the forest. Like that. Mother Jashoda doesn't go out into the forest with the cowherd boys and all that. You know, she came out to see, you know, if everyone's playing nicely and she's going to see that everyone's eating nicely. No, they don't. She doesn't come out at all. So everyone has their way of expression. So because we don't have that natural, our sarup, that we would have our natural relationship with Krishna. Therefore, then we follow, you know, according to what is our particular conditioning, the situation we're in, we follow the duties that prescribes. And so then that then defines what you're doing. So what varna, what ashram and that, what service, particular service you're once rendering, then it defines what you do. So it's a very straightforward system. There's no speculation and all that. You may, you know, of course, try to make it practical, try to make it work for you, but there's no speculation. So for Yudhishthira Maharaj, then the Dharma is the main thing that he's dealing with. And that's what he's famous for. And so we have to see that's the context in which things will be discussed. And others, then, they're individual personalities, and they follow all the religious principles. Like you see, they follow Yudhishthira Maharaj very nicely. But at the same time, as being Kshatriyas, they have that passion and that sense of righteousness, you know, of justice, what's right and wrong. So Yudhishthira is seeing it in a bigger context of Dharma, and they're seeing sometimes, like we'll see in this conversation, in an immediate context of Dharma. And what they're saying is not wrong, but at the same time as what Yudhishthira Maharaj is saying has a higher level of correctness. And so that's why this story is here. If it was just about going out, this guy poked me, I poke it back, then we don't need Mahabharata or Ramayana for that. That you just read the local, you know, newspaper, things like that. Then you get that all you want. Okay, is that good? Okay, so up to here, they've gotten this whole point. See, the gentle son of Dharma was happy to live in a simple life of spirituality, but he always kept in mind his God-given duty as a Kshatriya. That responsibility could not be whimsically abandoned, even if unpleasant. Duty must always be done for the Lord's pleasure. Because why people want to say, oh, we only chant Hare Krishna, we don't care for the rules, is those rules that are good for them, you see that they're very strict about, and they demand that everybody follow. But those rules where, like here, it makes may not be so pleasant, or they may not get a nice result. That's when they say, oh, we're devotees, you know, this doesn't matter. Like you say, okay, we checked the charts here, and this girl that you're insanely attached to and want to marry, you didn't check the charts first. And so it's actually only got, you know, 40% good, you know, compatibility. So, oh, we're devotees, you know, we're above all these things. And that's when they talk like that. But when you see it specifically for them, by them doing this particular thing, they get a particular benefit. No, I have to do this, you know, like this and that. And why you're saying I should go do something else. And, you know, so that's why then one has to be stable, like Yudhishthira Maharaj is establishing that. So that duty must always be done for the Lord's pleasure. We're just doing his Krishna. It was thus with mixed feelings that Yudhishthira dwelt in the forest, awaiting the day when he could again resume his duties as a ruler. So in the forest, conscious associate Brahmins, and when he goes back and takes up his duties as a king, then he can do those duties for Krishna. Draupadi, however, was still sorrowful. She found the course of events that led up to their exile difficult, which means the whole gambling match and everything. And she burned with the humiliation they had all received at Duryodhana's hands. Not just her. She's thinking of the whole family. I mean, she also got insulted. But the point is this, it's all of them, the six of them. Sitting alone one evening with Yudhishthira, she revealed her feelings. O king, when I think of the wicked Duryodhana and his followers living happily in Hastinapur, after having sent you to the forest, my heart burns. Without doubt, he is delighting in our misfortune, which he definitely is. When you set out for the forest, all the Kurus cried except wretched Duryodhana, Shakuni, and that vicious Dushasana. Those four, they were very happy with the results. Others, they understood this is the destruction of the dynasty. Draupadi again found herself weeping. She remembered her parting words with Kunti and Gandhara. Both of them had grieved at her humiliation. How long would it be before she was avenged and the wrongdoers punished, right? Because as Kshatriyas, that's their business to see to that proper things happen. And if something goes wrong, it's corrected. That's their occupation, right? Seeing you seated here on this grass mat and remembering your ivory throne encrusted with jewels, I feel much anguish that I can hardly look at you, right? So she's feeling bad. He's qualified as the emperor of the world. And now he's sitting on a grass mat while Duryodhana, who's, you know, he's sitting on the throne. So feel this is wrong. He should be there, not Duryodhana. He won't be a proper ruler. Your body is smeared with mud from the riverbank when once it was daubed with the finest sandalwood paste. You once wore costly silk garments. Now you wear deer skins and tree bark. I bear to say other husbands who were once waited upon by numerous servants, now scouring the forest for food, right before the servants would take care. So they would just perform their Kshatriya duties and all that, and the servants, then they'd do their servant duties. And this way everybody was nicely engaged. Draupadi's sorrow suddenly turned to anger. All this is due to the evil schemes of sinful men. O king, does your plight not arouse anger in you? Or are you so peaceful? Look at you again and again. Constrained only by his love for you, he does not rise up and destroy the Kauravas. But he honoring your promise, he sits containing his anger. So Yudhishthira made a promise out of his affection for his brother, then doesn't do anything. Otherwise, at this moment, Yudhishthira said, yeah, this is wrong. These guys got to be punished. Before he even finished the word punished, Bhima would have already run off. And, you know, he would have just run straight into the palace, straight into where Duryodhana, and just kill him right on the spot. Just like that. So the whole point is to that, the gambling match when he saw things were wrong. At that time, he would have just taken his club, gone over and smashed Duryodhana over the head. Problem solved. I mean, literally, problem solved. But because we know Krishna has a bigger plan, then, you know, this is how it unfolds. And so that's why then Yudhishthira makes the point is that even if the things are unpleasant, that's Krishna's arrangement. There's some purpose there, some greater purpose. So yes, there may be some injustice that this person has done this, that person's done that. But overall, if it's happening to you and you're a devotee, there's some arrangement of Krishna. Maybe you deserve it, no. But the point is it's some arrangement of Krishna. Because we'll say, maybe I deserve it because I know I did this, and so therefore this happened. Okay, that makes sense. But you could have done something last life or 10 lifetimes ago. You could have done something 100 lifetimes ago that for 100 lifetimes you're to be harassed like this. And so here, this life still being harassed. So those kind of things, and you can understand, it doesn't make sense why this is happening to me, but it does happen. And that's important to know. One, because it'll happen to the leaders, it'll happen to the juniors. Therefore, as a leader, then you can explain this to the juniors that it happens, but we continue on the best we can. And as a leader, then again, it's going to happen to you too. It's not that because, oh, I'm a temple president or I'm this or that, therefore nothing will happen to me. If it happened to Yudhishthira, it can happen to anybody like that. That's the reason that the stories that are chosen in the Mahabharata are always, you can see, generally quite extreme, quite unique, because if it wasn't, we could say, oh, yes, the Pandavas are having problem with their relatives, but not as much problem as me. I'm having so much more problem. Why is Krishna But the point is they have problems to the point where they have 100. Anybody has 100 brothers, you know, any devotee with 100 brothers. Oh, he had 125, a god brother, 125 siblings. But that's boys and girls. But he has that many. But I think that's about 25 moms, but one father. And so they all would interact together. So that's the only one that I know of that has even that many. And I never heard him say that they were all giving him trouble like that. I never heard him say anything that anybody was giving him trouble. So anyone can say that. Then you say, oh, I lost so much. Have you lost the empire of the whole world? No one can say that. And in losing it, you end up out in the forest. It's not that you have to go back and, you know, crash on the couch at your mom's place. No, you're out in the forest. You know, so, and okay, you have this problem like that, you know, happened. And so, you know, it takes a few months, 12 years in the forest, right? So all these different things, it's always there so that no one can say, oh, it doesn't apply to me. My situation is worse. So if Yudhishthira can handle this, that is our example. That's what we try to do. We may not be as good as Yudhishthira, but we try our best. That's what we try to do. Look too at Arjuna. He understands Bhima's mind and is forever pacifying him, right? Because otherwise Bhima's going to explode, right? By the power of Arjuna's bow, thousands of kings were obliged to wait upon the Brahmins at Yajnasuya. Now that same Arjuna has become grief-stricken. Does this not make you angry? And look at Madri's youthful sons. They are as dear to you as they are to your mother, Kunti. Now they are forced to live the hard lives of ascetics, right? Because those who are junior, you try to take care so that they don't suffer as much as you. And so they being the youngest, then does that not bother you? Does this not make you angry? Yudhishthira listened impassively to his wife, carefully taking in her words. So notice here, it's impassively means he's not getting angry, he's not doing anything there, but he's listening carefully. This is what we're not used to. We're either listening carefully and then getting too involved and everything like this, or if we're not going to get, you know, if we're not going to get all involved, then we don't really listen properly. So we see here, this is important. He's listening, but he's listening and waiting and seeing what's the whole mood, what to do, where to take it, how to, you know, what direction to go with it. She was surely entitled to her anger and frustration because there is a wrong here. He knew that and felt wholly responsible. The king remained silent as his wife continued. I cannot understand why you have not risen up to destroy the Kauravas. Surely, after all that has happened, such a response would be in accord with morality. Because on one level of morality, they've done wrong, they behaved wrong, and so therefore, it is wrong. And so her point is why haven't you risen up? Something's wrong here. Is your discrimination failing? Means you can't tell what's right and wrong. It is always appropriate for a Kshatriya to show anger when sin is committed. And sin has surely been committed by the Kauravas, right? So how can you sit here as if you forgive them? If a king cannot distinguish between the time to be angry and the time to forgive, then he's lost, right? So she's making a very good religious point here, is that they have to know when you forgive, when you don't. But it also said here is when sin's committed. So we have to remember is what's the Bhagavatam's definition of sin. Bhagavatam's definition of sin is if it's being done in connection with Krishna to please Krishna, that's pious. And if it's not being done in connection with Krishna, that's sinful. So that's then how you have to see is what's right is how it's being done connected to Krishna. What's wrong is how it's not connected to Krishna. Right and wrong don't have a value other than this for the devotees. For the materialists, of course, they have right and wrong. But then there's five levels of consciousness. So they're going to have their right and wrong on these levels. So we're using the standard of the fifth level, Krishna conscious level. Otherwise, senses, what's right, what's good for my senses, what's wrong is not good. That's why the dog, he perfectly follows his dharma and follows, you know, doing what's right and wrong. He sees something to eat, he goes over and eats it. You know, he doesn't see something to eat, he just lays there. So if you don't want him to eat what's that's there, you can't let him see it, or you have to have a nice stick. So when he comes over, you whack him. Then he knows, okay, you know, I'd like to eat this, but it appears that there's some higher divine power that's not allowing me to. And so then he sits down and looks sad until you get, you know, until he wears you down emotionally, and then you give him some. So the whole point is that's there. So you also have the economic, what's good for profit, what's bad for profit. What's good for we've decided amongst our community, you know, in the world that is righteous, then that's good. And what we say is not good, that's what's not good. That's what's professed by the atheistic moralists and all that, you know, the sophists and all these kind of people, is that vox populi, what the majority say is right, that's right. What the majority say is wrong, that's wrong. You know, so then everybody's saying, no, no, this is right and this is justice, but on what platform? Which one are you talking about? From which angle? Then you get to the third level of consciousness, then it's the Shastra says. Because before that, the first two, it's not about Shastra. The third one, it's about Shastra. So what does Shastra say is right and wrong? And so as we were discussing in the beginning, that's not necessarily the most popular position these days. It's like, if it says it in Shastra, that's okay for me. Like if it says, okay, brahmacharis don't talk to women. Okay, that, you know, it's like written in stone, you know, like this. And if anybody does, then, you know, they'll be tarred and feathered and drawn and quartered and, you know, whatever else you can think of. But when it also mentions that, you know, grihasthas are very careful about that. Oh, we're not fanatic. You know, we have to be practical. And, you know. So we take the rules as we like. We don't necessarily apply them according to what Shastra says, but more according to our background and what our previous samskaras, right and wrong. So that's why in the material world, there is no right and wrong. Right? Because it's whatever anybody feels. So only Shastra then defines what's right and wrong. And that means what's right brings you closer to Krishna. What's wrong takes you away from Krishna. And so then that's then how the definition of right and wrong. But what she's talking here, then this is, yes, in the Dharma Shastra, that a wrong has been done, a sin, it, the king is supposed to punish. All right? So, but she's only looking at that aspect of it. The beautiful Draupadi looked intently into Yudhishthira's eyes as she went on, right? She's trying to see his response, his reaction, what his mood is. I also know the scripture, right? Because as a queen, she'll be trained in the scripture. She'll know all these things. Scripture states that Duryodhana and his brothers deserve to be punished, which they do. They're aggressors. Scripture states that the humble and ever-forgiving person is always neglected. Right now, she's talking Niti Shastra. While he who is powerful and assails others at the proper time is respected as a king, right? So when he knows when to use the thumb, when to use the rose, he will be respected. Because you have to understand it's not necessarily everybody is religious or everybody cares, but if power will be respected, but when it's used at the right time. And forgiveness will be respected if it's used at the right time. So when you should be powerful, you're forgiving. And when you're supposed to be forgiving, you're powerful, no one will respect you. That will end up in weakness. Others will take over, revolution. All these things will happen. So she's pointing this out to Yudhishthira. Yudhishthira looked with compassion upon his wife, right? Because the point is what she's speaking has its validity on a particular platform, on the perspective she's looking at it from. But at the same time, then there are certain things that are, you have to see a bigger picture. Right. So therefore the compact, just because someone's wrong doesn't mean that they will be dealt with roughly. No, they're wrong, that you have to see also the situation, what she deserves, how she was wrong, all these different aspects like that. And if she had suffered so much, and if anything stirred his heart, it was her suffering, because, you know, the boys that they're more tough. They can handle these things. But the dealing with her, that was very inappropriate. It was her suffering for which he felt he had been the cause, because if there was no gambling, nothing would have happened to her. His heart still burned when he thought of how she was dragged in the assembly hall, right? Means that he's a Kshatriya, still burns. So that's the thing. For Kshatriyas, the burn doesn't generally go away. So, you know, here that Draupadi's pointing out, you know, feel the burn, that aspect. And so you should do something. And so now he'll explain. The pain of the moment would stay with him for the rest of his life, right? Because you don't forget those things very easily. But this was not the time to make war. Now we see, now he's bringing up his point. Because if you go in there, it's war. Right? Now, someone has something to say or something? No? Okay. So, war, then if at the moment Bhima had just, he would have by surprise, no one would have said anything because the Kshatriyas, they're fighting, like you see, Balaram. He's playing, gambling there with Rukmi and some other guys there, I think the king of Kalinga and this and that. And they're cheating. You know, same scenario. And cheating and saying they won. And Shakuni's cheating, but it's not that the dice didn't fall the way they should have fallen. It's just that he has these magical dice and he's a professional gambler. Therefore, it's cheating because he gambles, rolls a dice against someone else who's a professional gambler. It's okay. But here, as he's a professional and Yudhishthira is not, that's wrong. And the match is the status Duryodhana against Yudhishthira. So then Duryodhana should be rolling the dice. That's fair, because he would have sometimes won, sometimes lost. So it was actually unfair. So if at that moment, you know, Bhima had killed everybody, no one would complain. They would just hopefully, you know, that they're not one of the ones he's trying to kill. But now that they're out in the forest and everything, he has to see is, no, this is not going to work. Draupadi couldn't understand the entire situation. She's just seeing the immediate thing, and she's correct in that. But you have to put that in the context of the bigger picture. Then you may think, yes, we're going to do something about it, but we can't do it this instant. He replied gently, intelligent lady, through anger, we may sometimes gain wealth. But anger ultimately destroys mankind, right? Because it's by anger you're doing. No, it has to be that it's just, that's why you're doing. If we're talking about these rules, Kshatriya rules. Real prosperity crowns one who conquers anger and brings adversity to one who controls. And brings adversity to one whom anger controls. Anger is the root of all destruction, because anger means then, as you see in the Gita, one loses one's intelligence because it's based on frustration after desire. An angry man commits sin blindly. An angry man will kill even his preceptor and his elders. He cannot distinguish between right and wrong. So she's talking right and wrong, but if she bases it on anger, the problem with anger, once it's unleashed, you can't tell what's right or wrong anymore. So if the point is this, you know, wrong should be corrected with right, you can't do it through anger. That's his point. So nowadays, the thing, you know, rage and getting out there and burn down everything and steal everything out of all the shops, you know, because those rascals deserve it. And all this, it won't solve any problems. It absolutely won't. Because trying to use these methods, then it's just going to further agitate other people and create more. So everyone will just rage against each other and, you know, everything will be finished. So anger is not the basis. Though nowadays people try to make it out to be as, no, he's angry. He has the right. We should do something. No, but you have to do it with intelligence. That's why he pointed out intelligent lady, because she gave intelligent points, but not seeing the bigger picture. And it's not the time for war. He hasn't even gotten to that point yet. There's, even if you're dealing, can't deal from the platform of anger. So nothing an angry man might not say or do, even to the point of sending himself to death's abode. Even he's right there. It's obvious he's going to kill. Be killed if he keeps talking or keeps doing. But he'll keep doing. His anger will make him think, everything's all right. He's going to control the situation. And then it doesn't work out. Knowing this, I will not indulge in anger, Draupadi. Rather, I will strive to control it. So his first point is that, okay, the point's there, but sure, her thing is, don't you become angry? You know, why, how do you not become angry? But he's pointing is that you won't solve the problem by anger anyway. Like that, you could become destroyed by that anger. So therefore, if you're trying to put yourself in a better situation, then you're going to want to make some adjustments in that, that it's not done with anger. Okay.
Bharat, can I ask one?
Yes. Yes.
Chanaka Pandit is saying that the, you know, basically he's saying in one verse that the man doesn't become good by, it's a certain, what I'm looking at, where it goes to a certain limit that doesn't matter what one is doing, they remain evil. So where goes the line that the person don't change, they are like asuras for the whole life?
On the material platform, you're going to get those kind of things. It doesn't mean that they won't eventually become good. It just may take some time in the wheel of samsara. You know, it's just like if somebody's going up on the wheel, then they're going to be getting better and better. But once they get to the top, then they start making mistakes and start going down. And so you might have someone who's in a poor position, but has more piety than someone in a rich position who's losing it. And so it'll just come around. But the point is Krishna consciousness goes beyond that. Because the point is Krishna consciousness is about the soul. And so the soul, then they have the nature to act in the capacity of soul. On your conditioned nature, maybe that wouldn't happen. But now as devotees, then they can act within that context. So then, that's why then the focus on Krishna consciousness becomes the actual major point. That's what you have to do. That's why it's very important that it's understood that the in the strategy of this movement is how to educate everyone in the practices of Krishna consciousness so they understand who they are, what they're doing, and what the ultimate goal is. If that's understood, then you can actually move things forward. But if you try to do it from the material point of, oh, you know, mundane and all these kind of things, just can't. Like that. There has to be that higher principle is there. You have to be connected with some aspect of authority and the supreme Krishna. So therefore, in Krishna consciousness, that you can do something. Because otherwise, you see, like is being pointed out, you know, in the history, so many, you know, nice people, nice communities get wiped out by people who are not nice. So that kind of aspect is that. But what is the whole point? It's ultimately for pleasing Krishna. You're taking care to please Krishna. And so then if they're bothering the temple or this or that, doesn't mean then you're going to protect the temple. You know, you may be nice guys. It's like, what is it? I think it was Teddy Roosevelt, president in America, like 100 years ago. He made the point, speak softly, but carry a big stick. You know, so you do have that aspect, is that we have to see in the context of Krishna consciousness and, you know, others, the temple, the devotees, like that. One time, Prabhupada was there, and the devotees asking, so Prabhupada, you know, what happens, you know, someone's attacking and this and that and all that. So Shaitan Prabhupada said, no, you just, you know, depend on Krishna and that and that, try to be peace. No, but, you know, Prabhupada, they're like this. And Prabhupada so many times said, no, you just need to depend upon Krishna, you know. And then finally, after so many, the devotees are able to get blurred out, but they're attacking the devotees. And then Prabhupada just stopped and said, then you burn like fire. So you have to see the context. About yourself, that's one thing. Others, that's another. You know, Krishna's interest, that's another. So we know here that the Mahabharata, that the war will happen. That's Krishna's interest, because then you have all those demons on the planet are all together at once. You know, because before Bharatvarsha was the whole planet. So kings and their armies came from all over the whole planet. And then in one war, in 18 days, he got rid of all of them. And if he had just done, you know, one here, one there and all that, you may or may not remember, like all the different, you know, what happened with Shulda? What happened with Dante Vakra? What happened with, so, you know, this one, we may or may not remember. But if you say what happened with the Battle of Kurukshetra, everybody remembers that. So the whole point is therefore that aspect, you know, then was Krishna's plan and get the most done. So, where are we going here? You were something on Chanakya Pandit, right?
Yeah, that he says, you know, that kind of he's using certain example that doesn't matter if the kind of a basically saying that dirty person is washed 100 times, he still remains what he is. So,
oh, yeah, because that's the conditioned position will be like that. But in devotional service, then by the power of the holy name, then we see, you know, it always mentions even a Chandala can come to the platform of pure devotional service. So that we know for dealing with the outside of the karma is that if the guy is bad, he's most likely going to remain. Don't make plans that he'll be wonderful and we get out in the park, stick in the circle and get out of the guitar and start singing songs. But, you know, we're not going to do that. The point is we're understanding that the only thing that will change is if it's something spiritual. So if they take prasad, they hear the holy name, you know, that way they deal. Then they'll get some benefit. So we try to find, you know, either if there's some way or we just avoid. So that's just understood. But if someone's taken up devotional service, they're already being purified. So that's another thing. For the devotees, then we see is because they're acting on the platform of the soul, then from the platform of Vijnana Maya, then they can move forward. But if they're karmis, they're stuck. Is that okay?
Yeah, Swata Maharaj, once he said, I think he quoted something from Srimad Bhagavatam, that he said how the asuras are coming. He said, those who are refusing to hear Krishna Katha, even getting a chance for that, then he quoted that, you know, Krishna is, those are the ones who Krishna is sending to the lower species, life after life after life. But it's a little conflicts in my mind that they still heard Krishna Katha. It should be like kind of for their progress later on. So are they eternally?
Yeah, but that benefit will remain. You heard, but then you reject it. It's another thing. You're bad, and you hear it. Don't reject it. Because if you reject, then okay, you don't want. Then Krishna will arrange. You don't have. That's the point of Narottam. Lowest of mankind is the person who has that chance or has that opportunity, but won't take it. You know, it's like you have those. They go to the heavenly planet. Planets, and when they come back, they're born into, you know, wealthy families, aristocratic families, religious families like that. And so if they refuse to take up Krishna consciousness, they come in contact and reject it, then they become the lowest of mankind. So they'll just keep going down. But that they've heard the name and all that, unless they've committed some great offense, that will remain with them. So you just have to see if it's, you know, every day they walk by going to the office, you know, that's going to have some effect on them. You know, hearing the kirtan every day. And at some point, it may change like that. So the point is this is the position. But if one has contacted, you know, the devotees and the holy name and prasad, you know, directly Krishna, then it's going to have effect. So that's the side you should look at. But at the same time is, when you're preaching, those who are taking it more easily, it means if you have a choice that this person I talk to, they're interested, this person I'm not interested, just argues, talk to the one who's interested. You know, don't think, oh no, I'll sit down here and save this one. No, you talk to the one who's more interested. Because we have limited time, so therefore we put in the effort that's going to give the maximum result. You know, it's like the medic, when he's out in the on the front lines, then, you know, ideally he's going to save everybody that's out there. But if there's a shortage of time, he's going to save those who, you know, the guy who you know he's going to die, you're not, he won't spend the time with them. You know, he might get his morphine or something, but he won't spend the time. Spend the time with the guy. If he did spend, he will live. So that's the way it works. You have to put in your effort where you're actually going to get the return. You know, the return's for Krishna's, not for us. Like that. Means if you do find someone that it is, but they're a hard case, you know, you can put in the time. But if you have 10 other people that are so enthusiastic, they might get more time. You know, this guy you might see once a week, the other guys might see more. Or he gets, you know, half an hour, they get a few hours. You know, so you have to see. Is that all right?
Thank you very much. If there would be any other questions, could we take your time? Please, somebody who has just, if we don't see the hands off, we trust that your question is, anyhow, just to, okay, my wife has some question from the beginning of the session.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, this is Mambulu Businesses. You were speaking in the beginning about results that some people are more motivated by material results, but it's sometimes a little difficult to find the balance. Like, let's say if a person like myself with limited energy and capacity would, if I would say, okay, today I would just prioritize my sadhana, but then it would mean that my work would be suffering and maybe I would not do my work. But then if I prioritize the work, then the sadhana will be suffering. So I mean, it feels like you have to prioritize, of course, spiritual life and sadhana, but then the work will be suffering, and then if I get fired, then there will be even more suffering. So how can we kind of create that balance?
The point is it's not a matter of prioritizing the work. Something was there? Or? No?
Well,
it's
just
not
said
a matter of prioritizing the work.
Yes. Yes, Maharaj.
Okay. It's not a matter of prioritizing the work. It's just being intelligent and know what they expect and seeing that it gets done. And then you see that because the sadhana is important. So then you might put the sadhana at another time. Prioritizing sadhana that, you know, at this time I do sadhana instead of doing, my other work. It means that if work, it has to be done from, let's say, you know, for example, 9 to 5, that means sadhana is done before 9 and after 5. You know, you just have to find where it will work. You know, so it's not a matter of it's a this or that. It's a matter of you have to do the work. And so that's when it's done. Or if that's not working for you at all, that particular occupation, then you can find a different occupation that may work for you. But if this is the occupation that does work for you, then you just have to work around it. You just have to figure out how to get it all done. So your 16 rounds get done and then whatever else. So if you can't do a lot of reading of that every day, but then on the weekend then you can do more reading. You know, to work it in. That's what balance means. It's not this or that.
Hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yes, Maharaj. Thank you very much.
Okay. Yeah, continue.
Krishna Kirtan, your question which was there before, does it relate to this one that was the 3B, which could be now about your ambitious elements, or is it out of this topic?
If it fits, sure. Should I tell the question now?
Yeah, you could. You could, if it's okay for me.
Basically, my question about ambition. From one side, we are like encouraged to achieve things in Krishna's service. We can compare it to Yudhishthira Maharaj properly ruling the kingdom. And, but like ambition comes from a mode of passion. So it's not working with the present situation. So in this sense, you're actually missing the service opportunity if you try to pursue your ambition. It's a dilemma that I personally have since years. You're trying to go achieve something nice, but ignoring the present.
But to achieve something nice, you can only do activity in the present. You can't do activity in the future. Activity has to have it in the present. But you see that the activity you're performing is moving you forward in the direction of what you're trying to accomplish. But it means if I'm cooking lunch, I can't cook lunch tomorrow for now or yesterday for now. I have to right now cook now. And then cooking now, then I have something done. Now I can think about what it is I want to accomplish, you know, or what in the past, you know, has happened. I cooked this or that or how much time or what was the effect. Those I can look at. But action happens only in the present. There is no such thing as action in the future or action in the past. It only happens in the present. It can't happen any other time. You know, so the point is you have to see, like Yudhishthir, he's planning for ruling his kingdom. But for right now, in the present, he just performs his activities nicely in the way that he becomes more qualified to do his duties. Then increasing his hearing and chanting, increasing his association with the Brahmins, increasing his going to holy places and becoming purified. You know, all these different things. He's doing this. And from doing that, then he becomes more and more qualified. So Yudhishthira, even though he's not able to rule the kingdom at the present moment, he's doing things, preparing himself in ways that are valuable for if he's ruling the kingdom. Right? Because the whole point is this, it's just like if I want to cook lunch, then you have to be able to have things to cook for lunch. That have things to cook for lunch, you know, means that they have to be prepared. You know, and to prepare, you have to actually physically have to have them. To have physically have them, you have to have gone to the market. Gone to the market, you have to have, you know, money. To have money, you have to have done your occupation. So therefore, by the guy doing his work, he actually has his facility for the future. But it's happening in the present. So that's one aspect. The other aspect is ambition. Where does ambition come into it? Why it's ambition, then that's being misapplied. One is, Rupa Goswami uses the term enthusiasm, utsahan, that you're, and it's defined by Prabhupada in the purport as endeavor with intelligence. That's of value. But ambition doesn't really have any value at all. Like that. I mean, some, how much you can fit into there. That's how much it has. So therefore, ambition is not the thing. But you have someone who is ambitious. Yes, you can engage them, but you have to keep watch out of the way. For yourself, how would ambition have anything to do with it? It's what are your duties? What can you do for Krishna? And therefore, what can you do for Krishna now in the context of that? And then move yourself forward. And that things don't, because go ahead.
I think so, like, to be more precise, then it's actually a question of proper discrimination, because let's take an example. We have a temple. The temple is a mess. If we start a preaching program, then it will be counterproductive because it will not help us to clear up the mess first. And anybody, if somebody comes from the preaching program, then people will just get spoiled because there is no possibility to cultivate them with such a mess, for example. So how to have a proper understanding what's there to be done for Krishna? Because enthusiastically, we may start doing something, but missing the present situation, missing what's actually...
Wait. You can't take the word enthusiasm and use it in the negative when I was pointing out the ambition was the negative, and now you're bringing in some other aspect of being discrimination.
Passionately start something.
Yeah, it means don't shift your argument to try to make the ambition now look better. That was the wrong word, and so therefore you do. But then don't take Rupa Goswami's term, which is one of the six favorable aspects for devotional service, and then put it in a negative light. Otherwise, if you do that, you will never be successful.
No, I used, of course,
either in your life personally, in your service, or in going back to Godhead. Don't make the mistake of putting the teachings of the Acharyas in a bad light to make your political point.
No, of course, I used it in a different...
And you have to remember here is Yudhishthira is the one who doesn't become angry. I happily become angry if someone says something stupid about the Acharyas. And for your goddamn political position that you were ripped out of, and which is wrong, but now you're going to take it out on the Acharyas because it doesn't agree with you, you have zero support from me. And that may be what Krishna is trying to teach you. And that's why you're sitting in Belarus instead of where you were sitting. So be very, very careful about how you deal with the Acharyas and their teachings. It's a serious matter. Politics is for idiots. Using your intelligence, Prabhupada said, enthusiasm means endeavor with intelligence. So then why would you take the word and use it in a negative context? Oh, we're just enthusiastic, like a bunch of newbie kids and that, and doing all kinds of stupid stuff. Didn't you listen? Endeavor with intelligence. Endeavor gets something done, and using your intelligence means discretion. Telling the difference between what to do and what not to do. That's what intelligence does. Why would you take it out of context? What is the political purpose? What's your ambition, as you pointed out? What are you trying to get from this point? That you're right and all the other guys are wrong?
No,
you
want to
learn something? You want to move forward in pure devotional service? Or do you just want to be right?
No, absolutely not. I just wanted
to... Your question is a very good question. Your question is a very valid question. Very good question. But I wouldn't take Rupa Goswami's terms and take them out of context to make your point. Use a different word. Use a different term.
Yes. I'm sorry for going in such a way. I just wanted to express my point because by your explanation, I was able to more clearly see where is the problem. It's with lack of discrimination of understanding the field and not understanding what's...
Yes, but not enthusiasm. Because enthusiasm means now with intelligence, you see, okay, something's wrong here. Okay, the place is a mess. We want to preach. And so, therefore, do we clean the place up or do we engage ourselves in preaching? As you pointed out, that, okay, the place is a mess. Even if we do preach, then people who come to the temple, they won't be impressed. But at the same time is how you want to clean it up. Others see it's not important. And so then there's a fight about this. And then you end up, you know, in Belarus. So the point comes here is, why is it a mess? That's the actual question. Why is it a mess? That means people aren't trained. So that means the first preaching is to whoever's there. New people will take on the mood when they come and see the people that are already there, and they have an attitude, and they like to do things properly and that. So that's why Krishna at the end of the Gita says preaching to devotees is the most important, because you preach to someone new, yes, that's compassion, But once they join Krishna consciousness, if you don't keep cultivating them there and moving them forward in Krishna consciousness, then they're going to do this stuff just like you said goes on. They're not going to care about this. They're just going to do their own thing. The place is a mess. You know, no, you can't organize it because everyone's going in their own direction. But that's due to lack of training. So therefore, when you say clean up and you say preaching, the two are synonymous. By your preaching to those devotees, then it gets cleaned up. Because it's cleaned up and because of their mentality, new people now that you invite, they're going to see both the clean place and the mentality and be impressed.
So the principle is to like invest in the quality of the situation in which you're in. Basically, not try to dream about some other situation, which is like this, what I'm trying to bring out, that problematic aspect. But just be humble to accept whatever situation you're in.
Yes, yes, exactly. Because you see, that's what Yudhishthira is doing. He's preparing for his future rulership by qualifying himself in the forest. You know, so you see is while they're in the forest, they're every day doing their exercises. They're prepared for battle. But that battle is going to happen after 13 years. But they're preparing today and they're seeing that they're qualified. They're not affected by anger. They're not affected by lack of sense control or anything, because that's what's going to destroy Duryodhana. He gets immediate. In other words, motive passion gives you results now, and then you lose everything later. Motive passion, goodness, it's a little slow now, but in the future, you get very good results. And ignorance means you get nothing now and nothing in the future. So, like you said, seeing what you're in situation now, that you see, how best to serve Krishna now, how best to qualify yourself and to engage yourself. And that's what you do. You don't worry about what could have been, what would have been, what should have been. No, it's just a matter of this is the way it rolled. Why? Who knows? Krishna has a bigger plan, you know? So therefore, then you go with it. And so you yourself, then, you know, in your situation now, you see what I can do to somehow or another become more Krishna conscious and to help push on the movement however we can and whatever little way we can. Sometimes it can be big and significant, sometimes not. That's why Prabhupada gives the example of the sadhu and you know, in comparison with the fire. Sometimes the fire, you see the flames, and sometimes it's covered by the ash and you don't see it. So Prabhupada's mentioning in the purport there that when it's favorable, then they preach very nicely. When it's not, then they just cultivate their own development and all of that. And whenever there's an opportunity, they do. So maybe you have two or three people you can preach to. You do that. And in the future, then maybe you can preach to hundreds and thousands. Because it's the principle is what's working. The principle. And so therefore, if you can catch that, then you yourself become qualified. So whether it's one person or thousands, like we see Lord Chaitanya's associates, you have, you know, that one associate of Lord Chaitanya, they were insisting that he take disciples because he didn't want to. And then he says, okay, tomorrow morning, first person that I meet, I will make them my disciple. And so then he went down to the Ganga, went into the water to take his bath. And at that point, a dead body came floating past. That's the first person. So then he touched that person. They came back to life, made him his disciple, and Hari Bol. But there's others, they have thousands. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur had 60,000. So it's not that one's more powerful. Yeah, it's just a matter of what's the principle is the same. And then just what are the situation and your position, and then therefore how it manifests. Because Ramananda Rai, I think it's Ramananda Rai, he mentioned to Lord Chaitanya, no, Srup Damodar, I think, what activity will be done at what time and through which devotee, that only Lord Chaitanya knows. No one else knows. So that's the point, is we ourselves try to qualify ourselves. And then at the same time, we try to do our best, you know, to do. So it's not ambition that we're doing our best. It's just following your nature, because the results for Krishna, we want to do the best for Krishna. That's not ambition. You know, one has intelligence, one has drive, one has vision, one has, you know, all these nice things, but it doesn't, the attitude's not wrong. One has to see it's for Krishna. And then, but the results are up to Krishna. So we make our endeavor. If the results come, nice, it's for Krishna. But if the results don't come, we still do our work. Like Prabhupada mentioned, the rice husking machine, it husks rice, whether it's in heaven or in hell. It doesn't make a distinction. So, we, you know, things are nice or not nice, we try to do our service. So that service may expand, it may contract, but the quality of the service, that's the constant, the quality. And then if we can do quality and quantity, that's what the acharyas are always do, you know, if they can. But if not, it's quality and small, right? Some say, oh, is it quality or quantity? The Prabhupada's point was, no, it's quality and quantity. Achyutananda Maharaj was riding with Srila Prabhupada in the rickshaw. They would spend the day at Devananda Gaudiya Math with Kesha Maharaj. But in the morning and evening, then they were staying at Sridhar Maharaj's mall, right? Because we had no ISKCON facility at that time. So that would have been quite early, you know. So, you know, I'm not sure if it was 70, 71, or, you know, it was quite early. And so then after some days or, you know, some time of going back and forth and Achyutananda seeing what's happening in Sridhar Maharaj's mod and what's happening in Devananda Gaudiya mod, then he was writing the Rishi, he was pointing out that Sridhar Maharaj is interested in, you know, the good quality and everything like that. And he, you know, he won't expand, you know, unless he has that quality and everything. So it's about quality. He always would say quality, not quantity. But when they go to the Devananda Gaudiya Math, they had all these brahmacharis and sannyas, like 20 sannyasis, and, you know, they all dressed perfectly and the color of the clothes is all perfect, and they would dance together and do all these amazing things, you know, as an organization. And so then Achyutananda was thinking, so, you know, Sridhar Maharaj, it's about quality, and Kesha Maharaj, then it's about, you know, good presentation and quantity. He says, but in seeing your mood, Srila Prabhupada, you want both. And so then Prabhupada turned to him and said, you understand. So that's the thing, is if we can, we try to do something in quantity, but with quality. We're not interested, you know, like some devotees say, oh, no, but look at the Christians. There's 2 billion of them, and look at us, you know, and this and that. But most of these Christians wouldn't even know, you know, they wouldn't know anything. They don't go to church. They don't do this. They don't do that. They don't really have that. Something goes wrong. Okay, let me pray. But other than that, very rare, you know, a few moments in a week, they might be actually Christian. So that kind of 2 billion isn't very worthwhile. Prabhupada's point is one pure devotee is worth all those 2 billion. So that's the mission. The mission is if you can somehow or another help to make one person a pure devotee, then the mission has been fulfilled. Srila Prabhupada said that, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that, and they did things grand. But the point is you're throwing the net wide, trying to catch people, and then training them so that they will come up to the standard. But the emphasis is on that point of training and going back to Godhead. That's what has to be seen. And so then all your organization, all your everything else that you're doing, you have to see is that it's accomplishing that. So if the place is messy, of course, who's going to be impressed? But at the same time, is you have to address, why is it messy? Why isn't anybody cleaning up? You know, because it's not necessarily, it's not that big of a place. You know, 2-3 guys could clean it up in a couple of days very nicely. I mean, make it look really good. So that means with all the people that are around and in the community and all that, they don't actually understand what the standard is of Krishna consciousness and what we're trying to do as a mission. That kind of preaching you have to do, but that doesn't mean you don't still preach to the new people. Because the point is this constantly, people are coming in, people are being cultivated, people are advancing. So you want to kind of see that bigger picture like Yudhishthira is seeing, and then see to all of that. So then you're going to be talking to devotees, preaching devotees here and there, talking to them individually, giving in the classes, trying to do things together, having maha cleanings with everybody, you know, out there working yourself, and all these different things, various ways, like you said, using the intelligence, using the discrimination, to find ways to engage everybody and to educate them at the same time. And, you know, see that they're engaged. Is the chanting going nicely? Is the reading going nicely? Are they avoiding criticizing devotees? You know, what are all the things in place that they can advance nicely? And if that's all in place, then it works very, very well. You'll see that they'll move forward very, very nicely. But if they're not, it means something's wrong in the devotional process. You know, too much prajalpa, you know, not following the rules, or being, you know, too stuck on the rules, or, you know, there's greed, there's some of these things. And so one has to deal with these, the six symptoms that that are unfavorable. You have to see that those are understood and, you know, being avoided. And the six that are favorable, those have to be practiced. And then you'll see you'll start to get results, but it takes time. Because you're doing something very special, something unique. You're purifying a living entity that's been in the material world since time immemorial, but it's possible by the strength of the holy name. So therefore, in one lifetime, a person can go back to Godhead. You know, one has to have that faith. But this process has that power. It will do that. The Acharyas have said, Krishna has said, Bhagavatam also says, one lifetime. In the verses, there's one place where it mentions about how in one lifetime you can perfect yourself. That's what's so wonderful about the human form of life. So it's not just Prabhupada Bhaktisiddhanta saying that to just, you know, make us feel happy. That's the Shastra. And so we do the best we can. We may get more results. Someone else gets less results. Like you see, Radhanath Maharaj uses his program and he's got thousands of thousands. Someone else uses the same program and, you know, they get a few. It's just a matter of time, because he started out with nothing. One devotee's apartment, dinky apartment, studio apartment, literally. There's a living room, a little dinky kitchen, a bathroom, and I think there's a loft for a bedroom. That's it. And from there, then it just expanded. So they have thousands. And then they have, I think, like seven temples that are connected, you know, with you know, in the Chopati circle. And like that, it's just expanding. And then from there, their men have gone out, they're doing service. You know, I think they help in Vrindavan, they help in Calcutta, they help in so many places. And so like that, it's come from just being happy with that one place and preaching and seeing that the mood is understood. And then those devotees, then they develop very nicely. And then they're able to do so many wonderful things. So it just it takes that determination, that steadiness, and it takes time. And then you'll see is that like you said, that approach, using your intelligence, using your discrimination. But you have to know what to discriminate with. People becoming Krishna conscious, that's what you're trying to apply. So whether you clean up or whether you run whether you don't clean up and do a preaching program, if these are the two alternatives, who's becoming Krishna conscious in this? Because it seems that the people have already been made aren't as Krishna conscious that they'll allow the temple to be dirty. So what's being done to make them more Krishna conscious? And the same thing that makes them more Krishna conscious will make new people Krishna conscious. So it's not the externals that are the problem. It's consciousness. Does that work?
Yes, thank you.
Okay.
Narakriti Prabhu.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. My obeisances.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Jaini Tai.
Hare Bhav.
I just... was thinking, can we say that in this case the strategy is paritranaya sadunam vinasha chaduskritam, and that's the goal actually, what Krishna wants to achieve with Yudhishthira and Pandavas in this case, and then the operational can be the Kurukshetra, and like say Yudhishthira preparing for battle with others, can be tactical in the sense of this relationship to operational Kurukshetra?
That would be on that level. The means what is that? What is the first part of that verse? Means that he comes to protect the devotees and destroy the demons. So protect the devotees is the primary. Destroying the demons is the secondary. So one has to understand is in the secondary aspect, that's the aspect where that what you just described is going on. But the primary aspect of them being devotees, cultivating their Krishna consciousness, others becoming inspired in that, that's the primary.
Yes.
Because we have to understand is that strategic planning, that's going to apply to all. You're going to have the overall, but then within that, let's say we take a particular operational aspect. So therefore, the tactical is to achieve that operational aspect. And then that tactical itself, then you have so many different tactical things. So in that way, the operational being the goal that you're trying to attain, then the tactical becomes the operational for that the operational being the goal. And then within that tactic, it just keeps going down. Yeah. But the point is that operational, if it's not attaining the actual strategy of pure devotional service, then it's not a proper operational, or tactical, or technical application. So everything, even if it's immediate, it still has to be connected all the way back. That's why it says Krishna is the ultimate, goal, the ultimate. Because so many goals, it's just like, okay, you want to eat lunch. So, okay, the immediate goal is to sit down in the chair, right? And so therefore, to sit down in the chair, I have these, options that I could do. And then within that, well, the tactical is that, well, okay, to get there, I can't walk through these two devotees. I'm going to have to walk around. Now the technical is going to be, do I walk quick, slow and that, how I put my feet, which one I step with first, how I get around, like this, do I just go straight around and ignore them, or do I go by and smile and kind of turn and then kind of plunk myself down? And so I just described the whole strategic planning on how to get into that chair. You understand? So this is the problem, is that if one doesn't understand strategy means making pure devotees, you don't really understand strategic planning. Literally. Because it's a system that you apply in everything. I want to pick my nose. It's a thing. The goal is to pick my nose. Okay. So how am I going to do that? Okay. So what are the options? Well, you have to use something that's, fits into your nostril. Okay. My big toes won't do that. The other four digits will, but it's very hard. I don't have the flexibility of a kid or a monkey. So, okay. I have to forget about the toes. So now that leaves 10, these fingers like this. Thumbs are too big. Okay. That leaves me 8 fingers. Right now, okay, now I've chosen. Okay, now which of the fingers I want to use? I'm going to use this finger here. Okay, so now my operation has complete. Now, what's the tactical about that? How am I going to put it in my nose? And then the technique is, when it's in your nose, how are you going to move? You understand? So sometimes the strategic planning, they make so much of a big ta-da about it, but it's as simple as that. But if it doesn't go up to the actual strategy, which is pure devotional service, it's not real strategic planning. It's real, but it's not real.
No.
So one has to see that is that that is the strategy in taking part in that battle to help Krishna on that part. But at the same time, the main thing, because when it's written, Mahabharata, that's the problem that Narad Muni points out. People are only going to catch that part of the whole thing. And in Bhagavatam, then you see the same thing defined again, but now from the angle of pure devotional service. And so now when we, from reading First Canto, that understanding of pure devotion, of Mahabharata, then we actually understand the Mahabharata. So at every level, you're going to have this, but it has to be that each one has to go up until it gets to pure devotional service. pleasing Krishna, prema. If it doesn't get to there, then it's not a real strategy. You know, I mean, as here, strategy, setting the goal, mission, and the vision of the movement like that. Okay, the strategic goals for a spiritual movement are set by the Supreme Lord, the Acharyas, who descend to execute his desire, right? They set it, not us. Like that. Goal, attain love of Godhead, prema pumarta mahan. That pure love is the highest purusharta, as defined in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, anyabhi lashita shunyam. That's the highest thing. That is the strategy we're trying to attain. Then, what are the techniques we have? Then we have the philosophy and religion. Through that, then within that philosophy and how we're going to deal, then we have the sambandha abhideya and prayojana, like that. Then we see within that the sambandha, then you're going to have then the science, the epistemology, how, you know, through the senses, through shabda, through mental speculation, you know, or, you know, like that, or, you know, but, you know, we're given it's through what the shastras say. And then the ontology, that's the dasamul, sambandha abhideya prayojana, it's dasamul that Lord Chaitanya gave. Then how is that all going to be seen? How is that all held together? So we have a solid sambandha. That's going to be your achinta beta beta tattva. Then we can say the sambandha aspect of understanding Lord Chaitanya's mission is complete. Now, that means that then we're going to try to give to others. That makes for the preaching. Then abhideya, we're going to engage ourselves in devotional service. So we have the stages of devotional service, adau, shraddha, tata, sadhusanga, like this. Then you have the nine types of bhakti, Shravana, Kirtana, Vishnu, Smarana. And you're going to have the six exchanges, you know, like that are favorable and the six that are unfavorable. Then we're properly situated and that gives rise to Vaishnava Seva. Then your prayojana, attaining love of God, you're going to have, understand that that's the highest form of liberation, is that Preeti is beyond. That's the highest form, means being in a relationship with the Lord. That's the actual liberation. This other stuff, that's useless, right? And then you have the primary and secondary rasas, you know, in the prema. And then you have the different, all the bhavas, anubhavas, all these things that come up from that. Then you know, okay, so this is what we're trying to establish. To get that goal, you have to follow the philosophy of religion. That gives these, so that's the sambandha abhideya, that's what's in there. And so now that's what we're trying to obtain, right? So now, how to get that done? That's the seven purposes of ISKCON, right? So these seven purposes, you know, give the mission, the vision, the statements, how to fulfill the ultimate goal of attaining the love of Godhead. And then based on those seven purposes, now you have all the different areas in which you can now try to apply that strategy, right? So, you know, Prabhupada's gives. So they're going to, it means, those are all your temples, your GBC, your farms, your restaurants, your book distribution, the BBT, all whatever it is that are these different projects. And these are all operational aspects to attain that strategy, nothing else. They have no other purpose. If it's not doing that, it's useless. And so in that, we have to see is that the operational is attaining that. So that means the people running it have to know the strategy, right? And be managers. But if they're just managers, don't know the strategy, what's the use? And if they know the strategy, don't know how to apply it, they can give some advice, but someone else should be doing it, right? So therefore we see is that Srila Prabhupada has established all these different things, the strategy and the operational, he's given. And if there's something more to extend it, he's shown us how to extend it. You know, how to do. It means, you know, you have educational preaching. Okay. But now that educational preaching, you know, can be in, how you say, in a university. It could be at a college. It could be at a high school. It could be at a junior high, it could be in a primary school, it could be a Sunday school, it could be a nursery school. We can go, you know, to some specialty school and go preach to the, you know, the, what do you call it, the doctors who are that, or the engineers, the IT. That's just expansion of the same principle that he's given. And so, therefore, this strategy has led the blueprint, and then that is what you're trying to practically apply in the operation. right? And so that's the point, the operational governance, that everybody's coming together in your area. Let's say it's a temple. Everybody is coming together through their various aspects, what the temple does, to bring you to the strategy. That's what has to be seen, this guy is going there. This guy's going there. It's like the previous question, is the temple dirty? Now the point is, temple's not supposed to be dirty. It's supposed to be Vaikuntha, right? There's no dust there, right? So therefore then that means people don't know what Vaikuntha is, right? And so therefore they have to be trained. And so by them understanding what it is, we're trying to develop love for God. How are you going to develop love for God if you're dirty? Krishna is the supreme pure. Yes, you can sit down and chant, but I noticed that if you're going to go out with your wife to dinner, that you clean up a bit. You know, some friends are coming over to your house, and that your house doesn't look like a mess. So therefore, don't tell me, oh, we just chant, or, oh, no, you just have, you know, just we'll sit under a tree. Don't tell me that nonsense, because you're not following it. So you can say that. Then, as you're saying before, your tactical is now you're going to look at, you know, the consideration of facilities available, this and that, who does what, you know, what's the nature, you know, what we can do, how much we can do. You know, there's three of us and that's all there is, so we can do this much. Another temple, oh, we have 250, we can do this much. So all the management starts at tactical and technical. It's right at the bottom. Operational and strategy, those aren't management. Those are understanding. That's the primary aspect. You're trying to see what it is, where it's going. Why are we going in the right direction? In other words, we're going to put energy. Is it going in the right direction? So like you said, discrimination. How to see that the energy is actually getting the result. So that's strategic planning. That's our strategic planning. You know, as pointed out here, is that you have the goals of educational, political, and corporate institutions are different from each other. Because an educational institution is focused on elevating the consciousness of people. The political is focused on protecting and ruling over the masses. And the corporate is merely focused on gaining of profits. And that's all it is. People can tell you and whatever they want, but corporate only wants profit. Hence, each of their approach to the strategic planning will be different. And as ISKCON movement is established by Srila Prabhupada for the purpose of educating people about spiritual life, our strategic planning model should concur with that of an educational institution, not the political or corporate institutions. So therefore, a corporate model of strategic planning basically is absolutely useless for us, because they can't even explain so that the devotees understand how it even works. Because the point is they're not about to point out that the strategy is to make money. And so therefore the operational will be anything that can be a medium for making money. And tactical will be how to manage that so it does make money. And the technical will be the little points on who does what, when, who sits where, who turns on the lights, who turns them off the lights, who mops the floor. And so that much, if you say this is what is strategic planning in the corporate world, and everyone understands, okay, well, we're not making money. Let's put pure devotional service here, pleasing Krishna, prema. Okay. And so what's the operational for us? Temples, this, that, blah. Then tackle how to run a temple, how to run a farm, how to run these things like, and the technical is going to be the little points. You know, which room the guy's sitting in to do the accounts, which one the president sits in. Does he have a desk, not desk? How many chairs go in there? You know, how many people come in to see him? Do 10 cut at a time? You need 10 chairs. Only one at a time, you need one chair. So that kind of stuff. It's like, it's so straightforward that in 25 years, it can't be explained means somebody doesn't know what they're talking about. They don't know what is strategic plan. And they don't know the difference between the corporate, the political, and the educational application. Does that make sense?
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. And this is just the outline. It's just one page. You know, there's another 8 pages will explain this in detail. But the point is from that one page, you can actually understand what is strategic planning and how it applies to us. You know, so that's the... Does that make sense?
Yes, thank you.
Yes. Okay.
Well, I don't know if this is proper, but I like to. We discussed a few days ago with Manidhar.
And Manidhar, okay.
There in Lund, which is now here in South Sweden. And the question came how, what should be expected from the ISKCON as, you know, in one sense, he said, like his ex-wife and so many others are like kind of a, how would we say, a very polite way. ISKCON didn't took care of them, although they surrendered fully. So in that sense, what I figure out that when I turn to my karmic duties for a while, then all the economy was arranged and like that. So a little, we were kind of a little bewildered what could be expected on healthy way, because like in the beginning, there was said by the GPC here in Sweden that, you know, you just surrender and, you know, we will build you samadhi if you happen to die on the way of Sankirtan. So, but it's kind of a mixed many things, and therefore I'd like to a little clarify what would be the proper expectations of ISKCON maintaining us when we so-called surrender, or did we understood right what the surrendering meant?
Yes, yes. So let us look at a progression here. So you're going to have Srila Prabhupada's teachings, which then the central points are the books, right? Because he's going to have conversations, he's going to have letters, you know, different things are happening, but the books are the main thing. Now in those books, there's a message, right? It's about developing pure devotion, you know, pleasing Krishna, you know, as we mentioned, the strategy. Then you're going to have, therefore, then people are going to be impressed by that, and that will be your movement. Anybody who somehow or another in some way appreciates some aspect of Prabhupada's teachings, you know, Prabhupada's teachings, the devotees like this, they appreciate. Now, of those who appreciate of the movement, those who associate together, that's called the society, right? And then within that society, you're going to have individuals who are managing the, you know, places that are the legal entities of ISKCON, that those legal entities like a temple or, you know, some other aspect, that belongs to the institution that is there to set a central standard for the movement and specifically for the society. So now, those who are, you could say, when you say ISKCON, ISKCON includes the whole thing. But as far as taking economic responsibility, you can only do that for those involved in the institution. You can't take for the community. Right? You know, it's just like you have the church. It only takes care of those who are in the church as the institution. But it tries to minister to everybody in the community. So it tries to help everybody spiritually and emotionally and all that in the community, but it doesn't say that they will, they can take care of the, they call it, you know, the finances and that community is supposed to take care of. So we say it's fair. They failed as a community, not as an institution. It should be very clear. So it's like, you know, so many of these big cities, how many hundreds of devotees are out there in the city, in the community? So if somebody's having some financial problem, then, if there are 500 people in the community, right? If everybody gave 1 euro, that's 500 euros, right? Somebody gives 1 euro a month, that's not a big problem for them. And even if you have a few people like that, you know, a few, you know, yeah, how you say, you know, ladies or this or that can't take care of some kids, you know, even you give 5 or 10 a month. But that's what community does. We talk community, but the question is, which orifice are they talking out of? So the whole point is that we talk community, but where is community? Because they're expecting, why is the temple taking care? Are you living in the temple? Are you doing full-time service in the temple? And if you are, okay, great. How do you expect the temple will take care of you? How do you expect the temple to take care of you? You know, we may have our standards, but the temple has what they have. So when you said, yes, we're in the same Gatan, you do that. Who's living that lifestyle then? You lived in a bus. You know, you ate this and that. You came back. There was a room that was bare, and you took your sleepy bag, slept on the floor. When you're finished, you stuffed it into a box and put that in the closet. Who are these people complaining ISKCON didn't take are living like that now? So then, yes, if everybody lived like that, but the problem came was that everyone went to their own house, their own car, their own this, they went dental, they went this and that, wife wants to go on a vacation. And that's for a community to take. That's what grihastha means. You go out, you make your money, you do these things. So brahmacharis, vanaprasthas, and sannyasis, they may have more benefit from the institution, but at the same time, it's the community that is taking care of the institution anyway. And for the grihasthas, then they take care of themselves. And if somebody, you know, is having difficulty in that, the other should help. They'll sit around complaining that, oh yeah, ISKCON this, ISKCON that, but who's giving money? Who's doing stuff from the community? What's the temple supposed to do? Right? Means all those people that are complaining, they used to be in the temple. They used to bring in the money. So they, you know, during that time, they weren't taken care of. And if they weren't, that's just bad management. Is that ISKCON or is that just bad management? Is there a rule Prabhupada said, no, don't take care of anybody. So that just means bad management. And so, yes, people are young, people are enthusiastic, they make mistakes and all that, but it's okay. It moves on. So that's how we look at it. Because the same time is, we can't say, you know, my karma should be this, I should be living like a king. We can't say that. Otherwise, we would already be like that. We'd be the ones giving money to everybody else, but we're not. So therefore, then, this is our life. So we have to be practical and clear that, yes, there are problems. But most of the problem, as Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, the only thing lacking in the material world is Krishna consciousness. So because of our lack of Krishna consciousness, that's where there's problems. Like we said before, the temple is dirty because there's a lack of Krishna consciousness. And so therefore you raise the consciousness. That's why we were saying before, you know, originally in the last discussion on Saturday, that's the GBC's main job, to see that the consciousness is elevated. The temple president is doing his best, but he also has to manage. So he has to see that the tactical and technical are going on, and at the same time, people have a direction. But that's what the sannyasis, the preachers, the temple, that's what they're supposed to be talking about, not whether, you know, women are supposed to be gurus or not, and talking about that on you know, in Vrindavan, on Nityananda Trayodasi, and that's what the class is about. You know, that we don't need. You know, there's plenty of people who are woke, you know, and who have issues and they around the world. Let them talk like this. Our business is how to be Krishna conscious. You know, what's the standard of Krishna consciousness? How to attain it? People are having difficulty attaining. You know, like before, the first question, how do we balance between our sadhana and our services and this and that? And that's someone who's engaged nicely. How to solve that? That's what the preaching is about. That's what the training is about. How to get that? Because then if that person is balanced, then they can influence so many others. That's what the GBC is supposed to be doing. That's what the sannyasis, the preachers are supposed to be doing. Because that's the most important. But somehow or another, it's taken, no, if I say you should spend money or not spend money, that's the ultimate position, and that one decision makes me the ultimate managerial authority, and, you know, and I accomplish the goals of ISKCON. It's kind of like, who's kidding who here? You know, it's come right down to it's about the money. Is that management? That's called an accountant. And The point is who's got a CA degree? So we have to be very clear that when we say that the strategy is pure devotional service, we have to understand this is what it is. That has to be the focus. All this political stuff, that's come up because people don't know the direction. And therefore, you can come up with unlimited speculation. So that's why I mentioned there's philosophy and religion. So you get rid of the religion, now there's just mental speculation. Or those who are attached to it, you know, the programmers from this, that, and all this, that, and that. But then there, where's the philosophy? Then it's just sentiment. It has to be the balance. Otherwise, it can't function. And these are strategic elements. These aren't political elements, because Prabhupada said what's there. So it's not about, well, is it this or is it that? No, Prabhupada said this is what it is. We use our intelligence, you know, as Krishna Kirtan brought up, how to discern, how to best apply it in the situation we're in. That's why it's called Buddhi Yoga. Buddhi Yoga means you're taking Karma Yoga and Jnana Yoga and using them together. In other words, fifth chapter of the Gita, that's describing Buddhi Yoga. And then as you become more mature, you can add in some Jnana Yoga. You actually remember Krishna. So that combination between those three, that's Buddhi Yoga. By that, we use our discrimination and bring ourselves to the point of attraction to Krishna, love for Krishna. Does that work? Does that make any sense?
Could you maybe still simple question? So many, or said I say, we thought it's a simple thing. What does mean properly sarva dharma parityagnam? You know, what we have to.
So it means give up all mundane concepts of religion or made up religion and just follow what Krishna says. Just surrender to Krishna and follow what he says. That's sarva dharma parityaga. Means all our ideas that, hashtag Black Lives Matter, hashtag, you know, everybody's equal matters, you know, hashtag, you know, my guinea pig matters, you know, all these things, just give it up. It's not about all these things. People are still talking about all this equality. And do we call women Mataji, or is that a big insult? We know we should call them, hey, you with the funny lumps on your chest. You know, I mean, what are you supposed to do? So we argue over all this. That has nothing to do with pure devotional service, and it'll never get anyone any closer to it. We have to give up all these manufactured religions. Religion means the inherent nature of something. So an SJW, it has an inherent nature. The academic mentality has an inherent nature. So now they take that combination of all these social justice warriors, and then you take, you know, with this political correctness and all that, and you take that combined with the academic, you know, ascending approach, that mental speculation, and then it just turns into a mess, and it has zero to do with Krishna consciousness. It's not part of our strategy. So therefore, if it's not part of the strategy, it can't be part of the methodology. You know, this idea that the goal justifies the means. No one who said that ever got anywhere properly. You can't use stupid means to get a proper result. You have to use the appropriate means. I want to cut up a carrot nicely. I can't use a sledgehammer. You know, or put it under the front tire of my car and roll over it. And then take a putty knife and scrape it off the cement. You know, you can say it's no, but you know, we didn't have time and this and that. And, you know, and I didn't want anyone to get cut. So I thought, you know, it's much better to run over it with my car. Sarva Dharma means give up all made up religions, all this stuff that baggage we come with us, all our biases that we have, you know, that, you know, whatever it is that we think. Give that all up. Just surrender to Krishna. It's pleasing to Krishna. That's what we want to do. The acharyas have said this is what to do. We look at it. We try to understand it. We ask questions. And then when we're convinced, we do it. That's what sarva dharma means. It doesn't mean give up all religion. It means I follow no religious process. Because not following a religious process is a religious process, called an atheist. They follow no religious process religiously. So one has to understand what Dharma means. Dharma means the inherent nature of something. So when we only see things as Krishna defines the inherent nature, what is the Dharma of somebody? That's what Krishna. But we want to say, oh, no, no, we don't have to follow that. That's old. That's for India. That's not for us. And who's this us? Who are we? You know? So then that's the problem. You know, someone's saying, oh, we're Westerners, so this Dharma doesn't apply to us. What's the West? What countries are the West? Because then, or the Orient, they say they're not the West. Africa is they're not the West. South America is not the West. Central America is not the West. Okay, North America claims they're the West. Unless you get too far north, then you get the Inuits and that, and they don't claim that they're the West. Right? Then you go over to Europe. How far into Europe do they say they're the West? Right? How far down? Is Turkey, is that the West? You know, so like this, you know, it's just a matter of what you do. So that means you're talking about a very small amount of the population in comparison to the world. You remember, India itself is 1/7 of the whole world population. 1/7. You know what I'm saying? Many countries in the world aren't even as much people are as in Calcutta. You know, they're more like Runagat or Krishnagar, these little, what we call little towns here. And that's a whole country in other places. You know? So people are, these are the biases. These are the religions that have to be given up. This attachment to our upadis, our identities, that has to be given up. We're not these bodies. Krishna doesn't speak for Indians. He speaks for the world. When he says human life is meant for self-realization, he means anybody in human form. That's what's meant by it. And so you see, Prahlad Maharaj is a demon. He's Krishna conscious. Dhritarasura is also a demon. You know, he's Krishna conscious. Gatotkacha is a Rakshasa, and he's God conscious. So any of these forms that have a head, two arms, and two legs, they're Krishna conscious. Hanuman's a monkey. He's Krishna conscious. You know, how you say? Jambavan's a bear, right? Because they're Kinaras and Kimpurushas. Which means, you know, what kind of human is this? You know, it's got a human body and some animal head, or, you know, that's kind of jazz. You know, Garuda's a bird. So this whole thing is that, oh, America, that's the universal understanding. These guys have really, really missed the point. I mean, like, you know, really missed it. You know, like trying to get to, how you say, get from America to London and ending up, you know, down in the Cape in Africa or something like that, or down on Antarctica or something, you know, like that kind of mystery. So they're just really, really missing the point, is that Krishna consciousness means you're giving up any of these mundane biases that we joined the movement with, that we have, that we've been carrying with us for life after life. That includes, I'm the controller and enjoyer. And so that has to be given up. How good we are at giving it up, how much effect we've had, that's another thing. Everybody individual, they're trying their best. But one has to have that determination. That's what one's trying to do. You can't say, oh, but I don't see that everybody is pure. But are they trying? If they're trying, that's success in itself. And someone else is sitting on the side and criticizing, because they're not, I'm not going to do. That guy's life is wasted. Means wasted. Rashrama Evi Kevala. So Krishna consciousness is serious. It's something that you in one lifetime can correct the misfortune of, you know, millions and billions and trillions of lifetimes. In one lifetime. In one lifetime, you can come to that perfection. That's what's being given to us by Krishna and the Acharyas. We have to have that kind of faith. And if we have that faith, we see Krishna reciprocates, because you can't know what's beyond the senses. So by Krishna's grace, you can know that by his mercy. And then these things are revealed. But if you don't want them, you just want to say, no, we're Westerners, then Krishna's not going to reveal anything other than newer and newer ways that you can get distracted by your upadhi. Is that all right?
Thank you very much. Thank you very, very much. I think, Gurudas, you have a question still. Do we have still time?
Yes. We still have a few minutes. We still have 23. We still have 7 minutes.
Oh.
Yes.
Did I so wrong? Gurudas, do you have a question?
Hare Krishna, Maharaj.
My
question is... regarding that statement that behind, let's say, a particular situation, there is a Krishna's plan. How to distinguish when that statement is said based on devotion, experience, and knowledge, and when it is said just based on one's selfish motives?
The point is we have to see it for ourselves. Because the point is, self-realization means you realize. So you can see how it connects to Krishna, then it works. The other person that does, like Yudhishthira, sees how it connects to Krishna. Duryodhana doesn't. That doesn't mean that Krishna, Yudhishthira seeing it is any less. You know, or that Duryodhana is more practical. It's just a matter of you see how means the overall plan we can't see. We can't necessarily know. We know what the acharyas have told us and all that. And so they're giving us ideas that this is how Krishna works. And so we see that it's there, because the point is there is the aspect of what we're doing, but there is also the aspect of our own development. You know, because we ourselves are doing something. And it may be we're doing something nice, but at the same time, our attitude's wrong. And so then we're not learning by any other method. And so then things start to go wrong. And when they go wrong, we lose that mundane confidence. And then we might come to the point if we can surrender to Krishna. And then it may be understood as, this was just to get me to stop behaving in a particular way. Because for Krishna, we're trying to do all these nice things to express it for Krishna. Therefore, others who come, they're inspired by having a nice environment to do service in. So therefore, that's why we try to create the facility and everything like that. But for our own personal development, whether we have nice facilities or not, that's not the real driving point. The driving point is, are we remembering Krishna or not? But at the same time, is by having facility, then it works. People are inspired. You have a nice, clean, and organized brahmachari ashram, then their consciousness is better. You have a dirty one, funky like this, and that, no one's cleaned the bathroom in weeks, then the consciousness goes down. So therefore, we are affected by our environment. So we try to keep the environment nice. But at the same time, is ultimately, it's not dependent on that. So that's why then, for Krishna, it's that devotion. So then sometimes we may find ourselves in an unfortunate situation, like we see Yudhishthira in that. They have nothing to learn, but we can learn by what they do in that situation. Because as it is, Yudhishthira is not blaming Krishna. He's not blaming the society. Is Yudhishthira saying Varnashram sucks? Is Yudhishthira saying that, you know, the whole thing of Kshatriya Dharma is bogus? Is he blaming it on somebody else? Anywhere, no. Does Yudhishthira blame anybody else?
No.
No. But we just heard the last question. The person was trying to blame ISKCON. What did ISKCON do for us? Now, that's a valid question amongst managers, that they themselves who are responsible. How are you supposed to take care or not? And where does the line? Because as it is now, no one can tell the difference between the institution, the society, and the movement. They can't explain it to you. So therefore, they take care of nobody. But the point is you have to have certain things. They're taken care of, and they do full-time service. And these others, then they do what they can. They, they're, the temple takes care of the full time. Those who are outside and doing, that's what the community takes care of. That can't be explained. So then they're blaming, oh, what did ISKCON do for me? It's kind of like, oh, so you've been doing service all these years that ISKCON is going to take care of you? Is that why you're doing it? So it was all karma all along. It wasn't actually about bhakti. Is that what the person is saying? If you say this to them, say, no, then why are you talking like that? Stop talking like that. You know, yes, he's done so much. I know a devotee. He had, at the time when he kind of stepped out, he had at that time collected $500,000. That was back in the 80s. That's a lot of money back then. Now, you know, you're talking millions. And then he's going, oh, what did I get for it? Why, you were supposed to get a gold watch or what do you think you're going to get? You know, permanent vacation in Hawaii. You know, what did it say? When you joined, was there a list on the board of what you're going to get? No, it's you're going to develop love for Krishna. That's the whole point. But they're saying, what material facilities did I get? What about, what is your advancement in Krishna consciousness? Do you know about Krishna? Do you have faith in Krishna? Do you have taste for the name? Do you like associating with devotees? Do you like worshiping the Lord? If he says yes, so then that's what you're getting. That's the highest thing. And then to throw that all out the window because you don't get an apartment, you know, that somebody's paying for, and then it's not the apartment you want and the window's on the wrong side and I want that apartment. Why he got that apartment? I'm senior to him. I've been around longer than him. Why did he get the apartment with the big window? Why did I get this one? You know, when are we going to wake up? All these devotees, would they have said this before? They say, oh, but ISKCON did this. Like, ISKCON didn't do jack shit to you. You do this stuff to yourself. Because we behave badly. What, Krishna needs our money? Chintamani Sahasra Sambrahma Sevyaman. He has hundreds of thousands of Lakshmis. Each Lakshmi is all the money of the universe. So we do something. That's his mercy that we get that opportunity to do something nice for Krishna. And he reciprocates with himself personally. But we're throwing that out of the window because, you know, we're expecting we're going to get, oh, but if I worked in, you know, this company for this long, I get this much. But it's like, that's why people join that company, to get money for this much. But we joined ISKCON to go back to Godhead to solve the problems of human life. That's why we did. So we have to move beyond this self-pity and self-centered kind of thing where it's all about us and what did I get? And it says, so what? Who are you? Who gives a damn? You don't give a damn about anybody else. Is Manidhar worried about all the people over in some other place other than a political thing? Is he doing anything? Is he putting together that, hey, we got to take care of all these old ladies in our movement? You know, they've given their life and we're done. And he's trying to get people to be conscious of that. Hey, you know, everybody can just give, you know, 50 cents, a, you know, a month like that. And if everybody in Europe, they gave 50 cents a month, you know how many widows you could take care of and old ladies? You could take care of hundreds. Anybody's done that? Not one person. They're only worried about their own ass. So talk is so goddamn cheap. Like before it was, you know, if you're saying something, it's not worth, you say, oh, it's 2 cents. I don't even give it worth 2 cents. It's just such stupid political talk about themselves. Oh, society did this, society did that. So what? You want to go back to Godhead or not? That's why Mahabharata is there. Look what happened to Yudhishthira. That didn't happen to anybody. Emperor of the world lost every paisa living out in the forest. No one has had that bad of, and look at Yudhishthira's response. So that's what we're supposed to learn, how to see things like Yudhishthira did, how to have the patience like Arjuna had. Not that, oh, I got a phone and I got two thumbs. And so I can type all kinds of political messages and this and complain about this and that. That anybody can do. And everybody is doing. You see the riots in America? See the riots in Denmark? Why are they rioting? Because they don't want to stay home. They're simply saying, stay home, you don't get sick. How can they tell us I have the right to walk around the street and this and that? Yeah, it's just, You see riots in France? No, you ask the French. You know, what's going on here? Government told us to stay home. They look at, we're staying home. No riots. So that's the whole thing, is that as soon as we make it about ourselves, the whole thing's lost. And nobody cares. And you can say, oh, but that's the problem. Nobody cares. But how can you care about something that doesn't exist? Right? The senses of that complaining devotee, the mind, the intelligence, the life airs, those are all coming from the universal form. What's him? He's the soul. So what is he doing for the soul? He's simply saying, ISKCON didn't take care of my body. The universal form is part of the universal form. It's Krishna's. He'll take care of it how he likes. What are you doing for yourself, the soul? So that means when I say self-centered, I mean centered on the body, not on the soul. Because if we cared about the soul, then we'd do something for the benefit of the soul, which is, you know, it's associated with devotees, chanting, taking prasad, you know, studying the scriptures, and then doing whatever you can to maintain that position. Keep yourself a little job, whatever it is to maintain. But if you want to be the rich guy walking around with the gold teeth like that, the chains, and driving around in the Lamborghini, you know, with the guns and everything, hey, yeah, like that, then maybe you got to work a little harder. You got to get off your own butt and go out there and get it. ISKCON's not going to give you that. Who said ISKCON's ever going to give you that? Prabhupada was talking about Krishna's taking care. We had temples with 250 devotees in. Prabhupada said at the time there was an average of $80,000 a month being spent on temple maintenance, taking care. And there was nothing in the temples in those days. So it all went into prasad. Or, you know, a little bit rent, this and that. It all went into prasad. So all Krishna did was take care. And Prabhupada's pointing out, Krishna's taking care. So now if there's no money, why? It's not ISKCON's fault. ISKCON is the institution established by Srila Prabhupada to carry on this strategy that we talked about. This isn't the institution that's been established by Prabhupada to establish all kinds of, how you say, mental speculative, you know, political issues that people have had since they were a kid. And now finally, when they're 70, 80 years old, now they can get out there and, you know, Vanaprastha is meant to kind of like give these things up, not meant for now I got more time, I have to do less to do, so now I can get more political. That's not exactly what it's for. So I'm not sure if we're off the topic now or people are a little bit this and that. But the point is that's why Yudhishthira here in this point here, he says, there's nothing an angry man might not say or do, even to the point of sending himself to death. But knowing this, I will not indulge in anger. Rather, I will strive to control it. So therefore, you know, we do our best.
Thank you, Maharaj. Very convincing. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you,
Maharaj. Okay. Jai Ho. So, yeah, we're basically at the end of the line now. I get ready for bed in 20 minutes.
So anybody who has question, tomorrow we continue at the same time.
Yes, tomorrow, same time, same time, same place, same station. Hopefully, same, I say, potency of the internet.
Okay.
Jai Ho, Hare Krishna.
Manager, satsang, seminar, key.
Jai Ho, Jai Ho.
Gaur Premanande.
Hari Hari Bol, Gaur Hari Bol.
Hari Bol.